Culinary Now podcast is brought to you by Forge to Table. Forge to Table offers handmade Japanese-style knives at an affordable price. Forge to Table was started by JWU alumnus Noah Rosen in the pursuit of the perfect knife for culinary students, home cooks, and chefs alike. Their flagship blade, the 8-inch Gyoto chef's knife, is a cult favorite among professional kitchens. I've actually seen a few of these knives, Jamie, in my current junior level class. And I had to ask, I'm like, where did you like hear about this? And apparently it's just sort of, it's crazy how people are supporting this student, Noah, who's no longer a student, in his endeavor to really create his own knife company. They're really behind him. They love the knives. I actually wore the shoes the other day too, and people were commenting on the shoes. So either I pulled them off really well or they're just really great shoes. I love this knife. I know you love this knife. You said you've seen them around campus too. You know, we have a great relationship with Noah and the team, and they offer the listeners of the Culinary Now podcast a 10% discount off your purchase if you go to forgetocable.com and use the promo code Culinary Now. That's CulinaryNow at checkout to get 10% off your first purchase. Jamie, I know you love this part, but Forge to Table always wants the listeners of the Culinary Now podcast to know.
Have a knife day.
Back and back on campus, back to teaching, and back to doing this podcast. It's been kind of a September, a month, a year. Jamie, what's new with you? Anything good? I feel like I haven't seen you outside of this format in a long time. What's going on? Anything new?
I know. Not much really. Just getting back into the swing of things. I love fall. We just hit our first day of fall, so I was doing a little bit of fall baking this morning. I made my family's recipe for pumpkin cookies. They are sitting in the kitchen cooling off. They're actually better the next day. So that's what I've been up to, just some home baking. What about you?
Well, I basically, the only thing I do with fall ingredients now is mash them up into really digestible formats for all my young kids. But I really am just sort of starting to come up for air from, you know, the summer of taking on the two new babies. But it's been a whirlwind, but it's been great. And, hopefully they're into smashed apples with cinnamon. But speaking of being back, we're actually back with the individual who's on the call with us today. And we're back in his first sort of full start to the academic year. And we're lucky enough to be joined by the new dean of the College of Food Innovation and Technology here at Johnson Wales University, Jason Evans. Dean Evans, Jason, how are you?
Hi. I'm great. Thank you guys for the invitation. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited. You know, we don't always try and focus on like Johnson and Wales peeps because there's a lot of great things going on outside the university, as you know. But, you know, we had an opportunity in the time aligned to sit down with you. And I think that this is the right moment to talk to someone who really is in charge of like the future of where we're heading. And I think, you know, having talked to you outside of this format, I think that you have a lot of great ideas. So I look forward to sort of chatting with you, not always about business, but also some of the fun things that maybe have led you to this new role. So, sure. So welcome.
Thank you very much. And I'm my favorite topic of conversation. So this is actually going to be really fun for me.
Right. Good thing we're talking about you.
Well, that's perfect actually, because my first question was actually, so you're the dean of the College of Food and Innovation and Technology. And that kind of brings up what initially interested you in the food world.
Yeah. So this is actually, I think, a pretty interesting start to this career. And by no means at any point, even 5 years ago, if you would have asked me where I was headed in 5 years, would this have been in my head at all? But when I was a kid, I grew up on a farm in West Virginia. And for me, that was just probably the experience everybody else had. I didn't know how unique that was. I really didn't, and didn't for most of my childhood. I think most people grew up growing their own food. I thought most people grew up with moms that cooked every meal. And the truth is, I don't remember having cold cereal with milk until I was probably 14 or 15. And that was at someone else's house. So breakfast for me was eggs and gravy and biscuits and sausage that we ground ourselves. And, you know, but I just thought that that was everyone's experience, not knowing how unique it was. So what got me here, I think more than anything else, is that my dad was a traditional sort of hard ass farmer, tough guy from the South. And as a kid, that was really tough for me. I wasn't really interested as an 8-year old in building fence with my dad or working on equipment, even though I had to do all of these things. I just didn't enjoy most of what being on a farm meant. And in my defense, I don't think most kids would have either. There was one thing that my dad and I connected on, and that was cattle. I really loved the cattle business, and we had cattle and would go to livestock auctions all the time. The livestock auction was the time that my dad and I really connected because it was a couple of hours away from the house. And it was the one day that I was absolutely sure we were going to eat at a restaurant twice, once on the way there, once on the way home. And for a kid that just grew up with home-cooked meals that I thought were maybe a little boring, though now I understand how phenomenal they were, eating at a restaurant, even if it was Long John Silver's, was a treat. So it was more than anything else, my love of Long John Silver's that made me love the livestock business, which pushed me to graduate school in agricultural economics, which pushed me to a professorship in an agribusiness program. And it was there where I was at SUNY Cobleskill for 11 years. The most interesting problems and questions and projects and opportunities that came to me there were all food systems centric. I became really enamored with these incredibly complex problems that exist in our food system that most people don't yet see as problems. Problems related to food access or system resiliency or system or ecosystem impacts. They're just really complex problems. But buried within those problems are incredible opportunities for solutions and entrepreneurship and new products and new ways of doing things. So I spent just a lot of my career at Cobleskill working directly with small businesses and certainly with my classes and my students in that framework. The food system is incredibly important. There's plenty of room to do it better. So let's do it better.
So that's super interesting because, I mean, you mentioned now on the other side of it, you really value the home cooked meals, you know, the biscuits and gravy, which again, I gave you a thumbs up on the video that we can see because that's one of my favorite sort of stick to your ribs breakfasts, you know. But you didn't appreciate it at the time. And I think we can all relate to that, that like things that, you know, we experience when we're growing up don't necessarily, you know, appear to us as what's going to shape us in the future. But, you know, they oftentimes do. Like I grew up going out to eat a lot because my dad died real young. And, you know, there just wasn't time always to cook. We always had dinner at a table, whether it was at home or at a restaurant. And I think that that experience of going out to eat, you know, led me to emulate chefs and like really like enjoy that element. But now on the other side, I mean, you value the home cooking. Do you cook at home now?
I do. I love cooking. And what I really like more than anything else is getting the basics right. And if I'm honest with myself, it's probably because that's what mom did. Mom made the best mashed potatoes. Mom made the best beef roast, roasted chicken, perfectly roasted vegetables, gravy that just, I mean, whether you're talking brown gravy or white sloppy gravy with sausage for breakfast, it was the basics and she perfected them. And I find actually that a lot of home cooks don't, because what they're immediately going toward are internet recipes. And I don't know that a lot of people are looking up recipes for mashed potatoes or how to roast Brussels sprouts.
You might be surprised.
Okay, well, but so then I'm just talking purely anecdotally that I've been super disappointed with most people's roasted vegetables and mashed potatoes. So I love cooking. I still cling to the basics and getting those right. And I just think that gives you a lot of flexibility then. As you get a little more sophisticated and need to shake it up a little bit, if you know the basics, there's not much you can't do with that then in adding new flavor profiles. But I'm a little bit of a foodie. I'm living in an apartment right now, so I've just moved to Providence in January to take this job. And so I'm not terribly inspired by an apartment kitchen.
Right.
But I am looking forward to getting back out to a kitchen that really inspires me to do something different.
Yeah. So I think we all on this, everyone on this call, most of the people that are listening can value the idea of understanding the fundamentals and then, you know, being able to go there. And that analogy, you know, I'm a struggling guitar player, but like, you know, I think that if you learn the basics, you can do a lot more than if you just try and learn your favorite song, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And, that's but, right. You know, on that, I think your sort of, you know, highlighting or your elevation of the basics and home cooked meals, you know, it might paint a picture of you that, you know, you're a simple guy with simple tastes. What about on the flip side? Like, are you the type of person that, you know, wants to put the mashed potatoes away for a minute and go out and have something sort of avant-garde and new age and adventurous?
I should tell you that because I'm now in my 40s and I gain weight if I look at stuff, I actually don't eat mashed potatoes that often. In fact, very rarely. But if I'm having guests, if I'm entertaining, it's always the basics that I'm going back to. Again, because I think perfected basics are really impressive. From a home entertaining standpoint. But if I'm going out, for me, exceptional service is probably number one. I'm so put off by just hiccups in service. So exceptional service, even if you're super busy, I know I'm important to you. I know you're paying attention to me. And I know you're doing your darndest to get me my food. That's number one. Number two, because I do have these self-imposed eating restrictions that I try to avoid starchy vegetables as much as I can, certainly potatoes, try to avoid the sweets. And I know that that's not great news for Jamie. I've actually had to eat sweets with Jamie's classes before, and it just sort of puts me over a sugar edge, and it's a mess. But because of that, I love menus that have a lot of what I would just call creative, healthy options that are substantive and wonderful, but it's not just a Caesar salad. Like, I can order a salad, but it's going to be substantive and it's going to be something I've never had before. Or it's taking a roasted vegetable and treating it in a way that I've never had before. So in Providence, there's a couple of Indian restaurants in particular that are what I would call very progressive Indian. Fusion perhaps, but man, just knocking it out of the park with flavor profile on food that I can eat that's super healthy. So that's what I'm looking for. But service is a number one for me. And if you happen to kind of remember when I come in the third time that you've already seen me before a few weeks ago, I mean, who is that not impressive to? And I got to tell you, there's some restaurants in Providence that do that really super well. They see you a couple of times, they know you from then on. That really makes me feel good.
You know, I have to agree. I don't go out a lot, but I tend to always go to the places where I have worked because I know that they tend to make me feel wanted. So mm-hmm. I totally understand that service, that attention to detail. They make you feel wanted and welcome, and they're so excited to have you. And even if they just like send out one free small thing or pour you a little bit of bubbles when you sit down, I agree. It goes so, so far. And yeah. I love good service. And if the service was great and then the food tasted just like, okay, I'd be so happy leaving than having terrible service, but amazing food. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also being a little selfish here because having just moved to Providence, I'm in kind of the friend making game right now. And so literally everybody that we run into in a social setting, including the bartenders and chefs and servers at restaurants, I mean, we're in the market for buddies. So if they remember who we are, that's a potential buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right. So this kind of can roll into that. So looking forward and what we want to do, what you want to do with our college, one thing I noticed, and we just got the email today, and maybe something that we can talk about for your vision for the future, is starting to look at food availability. And we just got the email saying that our farmers market, working with What's Good, is starting this week. So making food more available to our students, where our campus could kind of be seen as almost a food desert at some points, and making all of this fresh produce available to the faculty, staff, and students is really awesome. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your vision going forward and some Sure. other initiatives that you maybe are thinking about bringing.
Well, I'm really kind of piggybacking on a vision that I think was established before I came, which was this transition from being just the College of Culinary Arts to the College of Food Innovation and Technology. Had I come into this job with us still being the College of Culinary Arts, I think that would have been one of my first things, is we have to say to the market that neither us nor our students look at food in a vacuum. Our students will see food broadly. Our students will see food from start to finish for a couple of reasons. First of all, most importantly, there are careers all across that food system. I mean, from the point at which those farmers are procuring inputs and equipment to produce food, all the way then out to distribution from farm to the processor, at the processor level, in product development at the processor, then of course in brokerage and distribution and buying at the retail and wholesale level, and then on and on and on. And I feel like even if we bring in a student who comes to us keenly interested in back the house, I'm going to go be a chef or I'm going to own a restaurant, I think that's fantastic. And clearly we have a number of students that do that really successfully. But we're going to set them up for success a little better if we show them that there's 1,000 other moments in this food system that you could actually build a career on. So that's first. The second thing is I think that higher ed, especially in the world in which we compete, so more of a technical career-oriented education, I think we've kind of abandoned this idea that college is a time, a really important window in a young person's life when we can help frame the type of citizen that they become, when we can help frame how they think about the world. I think we've abandoned that as a really important part of an undergraduate education. It's almost become, you know, come here and we're going to get you out the door as soon as we can. And immediately you're going to walk into a career and bada bing, bada boom, you've gotten what you paid for. I get it. That's important to a lot of students, and they've got to have a return on investment, a monetary return on investment. But I think that we've left behind this idea that in the way that we orchestrate our programs and the way we interact with students and the services we provide them and the amenities we provide them and the opportunities we provide them, you fundamentally change the way they think about the world for the rest of their lives. And if we don't change the way that people think about food all over the world, we're going to have some problems. I mean, our food system touches every part of our ecology, every part of our economy, every part of our society, every part of our lived human experience and the way people experience poverty. If we don't have serious thinking and conversations about food, think about where we end up. I mean, what happens if we don't tackle this idea that so many young people are leaving elementary school obese, so many kids are leaving elementary school hating fruits and vegetables because they've never been served to them properly? What are we going to do when the healthcare costs associated with bad eating habits? And I mean, let's be honest, so much of that healthcare bill that we face collectively as taxpayers is because of bad eating habits. When are we going to face that? Are we just going to keep patching it together and hoping for the best? We have to graduate young people who understand how important this conversation is and how important it is to have big heads on the conversation for every part of our lives.
So that's, you know, that's incredibly inspiring. And, you know, immediately all I'm thinking about, if only there was an event where serious high-level conversations could happen around real problems. Let's say it's a symposium.
Imagine.
So quick segue, look out for the CFIT symposium March 7th through 9th in 2022. But anyway,
nice,
back to my...
Nice plug.
Yeah, had to go. I didn't start the conversation. Jason did.
Yeah, no,
but what are you talking about? I mean, the college, CFIT, the College of Food Innovation and Technology, the name itself is progressive. It speaks to everything you just mentioned about moving the industry forward and addressing problems in a serious way, offering real solutions, actionable items, everything that you're talking about. But I also think, and I'm going to get to a question here, but when you talk about framing who you will become, and we are very much in this, you know, transition from culinary school 1.0 to 2.0, and that 2.0 takes on bigger problems. Remembering who you were, like, can help frame who you become. Now, I think about, like, you personally, we've had conversations in the past. I knew you started this episode by saying you grew up in West Virginia on a farm. That inevitably comes with sort of humble upbringings. How do you always keep those principles in your decision-making process when you're leading such a progressive charge?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked this question because it's very meaningful to me, and it's meaningful to who I am and to how I do my job. And that is, I grew up with people who were uneducated. My dad stopped school in ninth grade. My mom finished high school, but grew up in abject poverty. I mean, she was raised in coal camps, basically, where her father wasn't really even earning cash. He was earning scrip that was printed by the coal company itself, and you could only spend it in the company store. I mean, my parents had this storybook childhood of poverty. Out of that, though, both of them just developed this sense that the world isn't going to hand you anything and you got to work your tail off. And over their lifetimes, what they built and what they had, and it's stunning to me where they started and where they ended up. So the thing that I model after my parents more than anything else, and frankly, in this job, the thing that matters at the end of the day is work. It's work ethic, that nothing's going to come easy. I mean, this ship that we're running here at CFIT is incredibly complex. Every single day, there's 1,000 things that can go wrong just in our core operations. And you're not going to fight through those things and get to these bigger picture objectives if you're not at work and you're working hard and you're working as hard as everybody else on your team. And you've got a team that all has that same attitude to coming in and getting the job done. So that's the most important thing that I'm bringing from who I was. And no question about it, figuring out how Johnson & Wales in the marketplace remains the premier culinary institution in the United States. But then ultimately, on top of that, means a whole lot more to students who may be interested in social sciences and technology and STEM and mathematics and politics. Food is relevant to all of those populations. So getting to where they see Johnson & Wales and our college in particular as a vehicle for achieving their career goals is going to take a lot of work. So it's work ethic first. The second thing is, and I don't think that I put no value to this until I was an adult in the work world, you know, adulting. I grew up with people who did not take themselves seriously. They took work seriously. They took their family seriously, but they didn't take themselves seriously because nobody has time for that. We've got to survive. So we've got to do what it takes to actually put food on the table and get through the day and make some good things happen. That means I was raised by people, I think, that had really good senses of humor. They understood humor. They used humor. They were warm. They were kind. They actually thought it was easier to get through life if you were good to people rather than not. And so I can't tell you how valuable that is to me every single day in this job when I have decisions to make. And sometimes not terribly good news to deliver. First and foremost, I want the people who work here to understand that I'm working really hard. Secondly, I want them to understand that there's a heart there, there's a real person there, and with a lot of good intention. So it boils down for me as just being a good guy is kind of what I took from my upbringing that will be with me the rest of my life.
That's amazing. And I think that's a great point, that you're right. We can't take ourselves too seriously, because I've definitely fallen into this trap too. When I was a first year teacher starting out, I was trying to emulate somebody I wasn't, trying to be this thought of what a teacher is, until I realized I'm just going to be myself. And then everything was so much more authentic. And I know that your background, you were a faculty member, so you were teaching.
Yes.
And you're going to be doing that again in the Masters of Food Innovation and Technology degree, correct?
Well, so actually I'm teaching right now. I just came from a class to the podcast. This fall, I'm teaching a group of undergraduates who back in the spring applied to our first Future Food All-Stars Challenge. So we took the top 9 teams, and they're in a directed experiential education or a special project class with me this fall that Tyler Florence is actually co-teaching with me. So Tyler, of course, is a JWU alum and has made a name for himself, not only in food television, but in cookbooks and restaurants and in television production. So this is a known quantity to our students, who are super, super excited to have Tyler working with us in this class. Tyler actually is still with my students this afternoon. I peeled away and left him to his own devices with my students. But they all of them are working toward a finalized marketing plan that they'll then pitch. And with Tyler's generosity and other donors, there's a $10,000 cash prize for the winning team that they can use to pursue their business. Our intent is that we do this every year, and that we'll have a new food entrepreneur in residence like Tyler joining us in the effort year after year. Now, ultimately, you know, our Food Innovation and Technology Master's program just launched this fall. Absolutely. If there's opportunities for me to pop in and teach, guest lecture, whatever. I am a teacher, and I had classes right up through last December at my previous institution. I am a professor. I'll always be a professor. I hope to be a faculty-centric dean, especially here at CFIT. I mean, CFIT faculty's jobs are so hard. I mean, you're not in a traditional classroom usually. You're in a lab environment for 6 hours at a time with students, with knives and fire and with anxieties and with their thoughts about how something should be done, even if it's not the right way to do something. So my hat's off to faculty in that teaching environment. But I first and foremost am a teacher. So me doing this class is really just me kind of getting my fix. I don't think I can go without it for very long.
So
I love hearing that. That's so nice to hear.
I think that, I mean, obviously I know as a faculty member who reports to you, it's like, it's inspiring to see someone who leads by example, who gets in and actually teaches on top of all the other sort of clerical stuff and administrative stuff that you do. And I think that lesson, you know, doesn't fall short on our students. I think they see that. And I think that that's a really important takeaway for anyone listening, is that, you know, that hard work ethic, not only is it, you know, incredibly important in the traditional form of restaurants, but anything that involves, you know, being successful. So I appreciate you sharing your teaching story. My, I guess, final question would be, like, you know, given all the challenges that higher education, culinary education, et cetera, are facing, what is your, like, glimmer of hope for the future? What do you think is going to truly put us on the other side and help us continue to what you said earlier, being a premier culinary destination for education?
Sure. Well, first of all, the entire education sector, higher ed, I think we're in a period that's going to be with us for quite some time of that entire industry resurfacing. I think that there are colleges that exist now that won't exist in 10 years. I mean, in part because of demographic change, that means that in certain parts of the country, we have fewer young people, and the Northeast is one of them. It's also that, you know, frankly, in higher ed, I think we went on a building boom when the baby boomer generation first started coming to college. And so existing colleges expanded, new campuses were added, and the system grew very, very quickly without a whole lot of thought to what, you know, 40 years from then it might look like if the demographic fortunes change. How are we going to use all of these assets, these buildings, these campuses? The ones that will survive, the ones that will make it through, are the ones that offer programming that nobody else offers. Something incredibly unique, some unique package of academic program, campus life experience, student services, location. And no question for me, Johnson & Wales, especially our food innovation and technology programs fall into that camp. I think we have to sell food programming differently, though. Historically, Johnson & Wales' traditional student population have been more technical, vocational students, and certainly others. But our core has been those that are interested in the traditional technical culinary baking and pastry fields. That's still going to be the case to some extent, but I think that we actually have to go to market and say, no matter what you want to be, this type of education is going to teach you teamwork. It's going to teach you communication. It's going to teach you management. It's going to teach you creativity. It's going to teach you how to think on your feet. And more important than anything else, it's going to teach you confidence. You can't get through our lab curriculum if you're not creative, competent, a team player, communicate well, and a problem solver. Higher ed has been in a tizzy for 10 years now about how we teach soft skills. How are we going to get this to happen? How do you teach students to be problem solvers? Well, CFIT does it. You put them in lab environments where if they don't work together and solve problems, nothing's going to go on the plate. So I actually think that we have to begin selling food education as the education for anybody and everybody who wants a transferable set of skills that they can use in any field. Now, yes, in the meantime, they're going to pick up some technical skills, but what's bad about that? I mean, if you're in your 40s and you actually understand food and know how to cook and know how to bake and know how to mix a drink, I mean, that's just a life skill, right? Don't you become the most important and interesting person at a social gathering if you're the one that knows how to do all that? So I actually think that we have to fundamentally reposition what food education is. It is not just a means to a technical end. We're building professionals, period. So we've got to change how we're going to market.
That's so true. And I'll say from my personal experience, my parents wanted me to get a bachelor's degree and they didn't care what it was in. They just wanted me to get a bachelor's because you're so much more marketable when you have a bachelor's. But imagine if that bachelor's was in culinary or baking and pastry, and then you go work at a bank, you're going to be so much more interesting to your fellow coworkers if you're like, oh yeah, I know how to make a tart tin. And they're going to be like, oh, what's that?
Absolutely. No, I think that honestly, we maybe have sold this generation and the generation before it short a little bit by making them believe that coming to college is going to teach you everything you need to know about how to do a job. I think all of us on this call know that's not true. You learn how to do a job once you have a job, right? You learn it on the every employer has a different culture, different processes, different everything. So these kids are fooling themselves if they think they're going to walk out of here ready to master a job. So what we can do instead is assure them that they're going to walk out competent, creative, communicative, team players who can solve a problem in a pinch. What employer doesn't want that in a 20-something?
Exactly.
Oh, for sure. Well, as we're looking at the time, we are going to wrap up. But before we let you go, I am wondering, so you've been at Johnson & Wales about 9 months, almost a year now. What's been your favorite moment so far? Is there one that you're like stands out specifically?
Besides meeting us.
Right. Or coming to my chef's table.
Well, that was delicious. though, a tummy ache for a couple of days. My favorite moment, honestly, is now that I'm a semester and a few weeks in, because I've really tried to make myself available to students and to have a dean's table for students and to teach. Having students in the hallway call me by my name, I think is really super special to me, in part because I think we've all come from systems where administration, especially in academia, where administration is pretty far removed from the primary customer, which is the student. And the fact that students are saying hello to me and know who my name, what my name is, I think it means I'm doing what I'm trying to do right. Now you're going to ask me what the toughest moment is, right?
No, we were going to leave it on a positive.
Okay. But now you have to say. Now you have to tell us.
Well, I will tell you that the me just managing, trying to be the good guy, gets me through 90% of days. But there's 10% of the time where that's a real liability for me because you've got to be confrontational, right? You've got to fight for something and you've got to deliver bad news sometimes. I'm still not used to that. And I think that if I do become used to that, it probably means I've not done the job right. If those things become easy, because it means the job would have completely changed me. And so it's that stuff, the typical hard stuff that's hard. But listen, this is a well-oiled machine and the people that work here are incredibly dedicated. I have so much help. I don't leave most days under a great deal of stress because I assume that what we've got to get done, we're Johnson & Wales and we can get it done.
Well, on that note, I think that no better way to end than we'll just get it done. And, you know, the first thing we'll start is by, you know, editing and posting this podcast. So, Jason, I just want to say thank you. And I know I speak for Jamie too. Thank you for the time. I know you're incredibly busy. We look forward to seeing you on campus. If you haven't had a chance to say hi to Jason and you're on campus, please stop by.
Please.
He wants to meet you. You know, he's really got a good vision for us. So, we look forward to working with you.
Thank you both. This was fun.
All right.
Thank you.
Talk to everyone later. Bye.
The Culinary Out podcast is produced by Jamie and Matt, but mostly Matt.
All of our music is generously provided by our buddy, Matty Burns. Check him out at mattburnsmusic.com.
And you can find us on social media at Culinary Out podcast or email us at culinarynowpodcast@gmail.com.
And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review, please.
5 stars.
We'll talk to you soon.
We're the brave and the bold.
And we out.